and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon recording from downtown Nicosia from my virtual studio. And with me in my virtual studio, all the way from Jerusalem, I have Iman Aoun, an award-winning Palestinian theatre artist who is seen within the international community as an accomplished director, producer, actor, dramaturge, and an intellectual. Welcome, Iman.
Thank you. Thank you, Magda, for having me. I'm really glad to be with you.
Well, I'm surprised, as I said earlier, I'm surprised we haven't met before because we are in similar circles in a lot of sectors. But let's start at the point that actually caught my eye, which is your Gaza stories, your Gaza monologues, which is something that you've been doing for 10 years. It's something that's very pertinent now, and it's something that you're also studying as well now. You're using it, all the knowledge you've gathered, and you're doing a postgraduate degree. So tell us about your journey with the Gaza stories.
Yes, well, it really started long ago because Ashtar Theatre, that was established in 91 in Jerusalem as the first theatre school, it was also working in Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza at the same time, because at that time, the whole space was one, let's say, and there were no division between like what happened after Oslo of the West Bank, Gaza, etc., etc. So we always had our students studying theater in Gaza, and in 2008-2009, after Israel had imposed a very strict closure on the Gaza Strip, there was the first assault, the first war, the cast-led operation, what they call it, on Gaza, which lasted for 22 days between end of November, beginning end of December, beginning of January 2008-2009. And so the young people who were studying theater were traumatized completely. They lost their homes, they lost their siblings or the loved ones. So it was a big shock for the community, but mainly for the young people. And this what really drove me to think that it is the time to redirect our focus of the training, of the theater training in Gaza, to to help our students to regain confidence, to also overcome the trauma that they have lived, and to be able to share their stories and their testimonies of what they have endured during these 22 days. So we started giving them drama therapy, theater of the oppressed, techniques, psychodrama techniques. And so with my colleague Ali Abu Yassin, who lives in Gaza, we were working with these young people. We started with 100 people, 100 students, and then we reduced them.
What age group are you talking about?
Between 13 to 18. So most of them were...
And can I just interrupt a little bit more? I think it's very important that you're talking to that age group, because a lot of the time we underestimate what they are feeling or how they are absorbing what's happening around them, and they feel invisible, and invisibility means they end up with wounds that become poisoned.
Absolutely.
So the fact that you're talking about giving them a space to speak or not be invisible, to be visible, is very precious work.
Absolutely, Magda. It's also more than that when they have lost complete trust in themselves and in their surrounding and in their parents, in all the grown-ups, because usually kids in time of war, they feel that they have to be prevented from war, from death, from atrocities, and they look up to their parents mainly. But when they lose their parents, when they lose trust in their parents, or in their teachers, or in every grown-up, because usually grown-ups who do the all these atrocities,
the protection.
No, but they do the atrocities as well. So,
but they also they're the ones that should be protecting them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the floor underneath them becomes molded and it becomes shaky, and they don't stand firm on the ground, and so they lose trust in themselves, and create the three F's of fear, furious, fury and frustration. And so all these feelings, they feel invisible, they feel very angry, or they feel very violent towards themselves and their surrounding. And so we wanted really to work with these young people in order to give them another time the trust in themselves and in their surrounding, as well as we wanted to create solidarity between with them. We wanted to create solidarity with them from other peers of their age around the world, from people also inside the country, from people in the West Bank who are unable to reach them because the West Bank and Gaza were completely separated and still is. So we have started this idea of giving them a platform to speak, to write, to tell their story, to tell their testimonies of what they have lived during the 22
without
days.
Without judgment.
Absolutely.
To tell their story without judgment, which is very important.
Absolutely. Because this is what giving a voice. I mean, if you want to judge anyone, then you don't give the voice, you give indications, and theater doesn't work this way. Theater really gives a space, and gives the liberty, and gives a horizon for these young people to dream also, and to think, because we have looked into three areas of their psychology and of their emotions. What they have been living before, during, and after. Also, what they want to tell the grown-ups. What they would want, how they would have done it differently. And this is why that is the strength of these monologues, that the monologues are somewhat wise, because people can really learn a lot from them. And that's why they are still living for so much time. I mean, 15 years now, we're still, and they are still accurate, unfortunately. Of course, we want them to stop. We wanted the war to stop. We wanted the political situation to be completely different. We wanted freedom to our people, and a sovereign state of Palestine. But nothing had happened, of course, and the occupation was doing every two years a war on Gaza, every 2 years. And so, unfortunately, these monologues stayed accurate.
Unfortunately, what has become apparent, although the Western media doesn't advertise it a lot, the IDF targets especially the young boys of the age group you're talking about.
They target babies, they target women, they target everyone, and yes, of course, because they are the future of the country. And so these young people, they grow very frustrated, very angry, and so it really stays in a vicious circle, frustrated people, angry people would only want to do more revenge. They wouldn't, and so on and so forth. So we become two separate poles of people who are either preys or predators. And at the moment, we are the preys. But But this has to stop. But who is stopping it? No one. Because, as we know, politics do not work with emotions. Politics work with economy, power, and resources.
Control of resources.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, so the wars go on, and the artists go on as well. And we are for humanity. We are for a better future of our people and youngsters. And so we try all the time to mend the atrocities that are made on the ground from the war, but also we try to mend and heal the wounds of our people after the war.
Tell me, is your monologue structured in a way that the young people themselves tell their stories, and are the stories repeated, or do you change it? Because I know the monologues have been going on for 10 years.
So 15.
Are they 15? Oh, so are they recorded, and the number of monologues is growing?
Well, the first monologues were 33 monologues written and played by 33 young cousins, but we had shared them throughout the world, where 50 groups in 36 countries around the world had picked up these monologues, translated them into their languages, and presented them by the same age group. And it all started at the same day, the 17th of October, 2010. And from that day onward, people kept on doing these monologues because they have looked at them as a way of also raising the voices of young people and, as I said before, creating solidarity and understanding and awareness between young people and making them really realize that there are young people of the same age living in other countries that are facing different lives and facing injustice and facing occupation and facing oppression. And so it's important.
But I think there's also solidarity, because there's also similarities, because I might not be living occupation in Palestine, but I'm living somewhere where there's oppression of freedom of speech. So oppression, so to me, it's, I agree that it's raising the voices and giving a visibility to Gazan youth globally, but it's also them, the youth abroad, finding that they're not alone in other situations. Because like in Brazil, the violence of the gangs and the violence of the favelas and of poverty is a different kind of oppression, but it's an oppression. And it also has a fury and a frustration and a fear.
Absolutely.
I'm not minimizing either of the areas, and I'm grateful to be living where this is not so apparent. But it's also bringing together children to say, you know what, violence has different faces. Oppression has different faces. And I might think my violence is unique. It might be unique, but there's someone somewhere else that's living a violence that's similar to mine. So I'm not alone.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I do agree with everything that you said, and I would add to that the fact that there are, you mentioned Brazil, and I would also mention the landless people who are also facing another kind of oppression and occupation of their land, either they are indigenous and they don't own their own land, or they are what used to be the people who came with slavery, and also they became landless as well. So in all over the world there are oppression, and oppression, as you said, it really takes different faces and different
dimensions.
Yes, and so but also I wanted to add the fact that with the Gaza monologues, what is unique and what is important is the strength of theater, the strength of art, in making a difference in the lives of those who are oppressed, and in the lives who are like facing wars and atrocities and genocides, etc. So the power of the art is also an important factor to shed light on. Now,
As I said to you before we spoke, I think art sheds light in a way that can be more effective, because it's not words necessarily, it's actions, it's me expressing myself. So people, it's can be understood by more people than an academic piece of an academic document.
Yes.
It's easier to understand.
Yes, because it talks to your emotions. Mm-hmm. Because it also, because in theater, you don't only hear it, you also see it. You are part of a living experience, face to face with actors. But also, one important factor is that, back to trauma, is that with theater, usually trauma gets into your body and it sits there and it doesn't really get out unless you really push the trauma out through physical actions and through different exercises that talks to your mind, to your heart, and to your body. So the three things, they have to really be tackled together in order to release the strong, unnecessary emotions that are hidden, that are coming as a result of the trauma in your body. And so that is also, if when you see a play that talks about trauma, then there's also a certain release from the side of the audience, because there is a kind of transformation there happening in the room. But the major transformation happens to the people who are involved in the project. Like our people had faced complete transformation, and we also had psychologists on board who had studied the case and who had followed our youngsters throughout the project, but also psychologists who had seen the effect of the transformation that happened on the kids who had presented the voices of our youngsters had also been
transformed.
It was a major effect on them, and not only for the period that they are involved, but also it continued with them until today. So it is an important wave. It became a wave of knowledge, understanding, of growth.
By saying it once, it actually gives you the confidence to say it twice and to say it in different ways and to enact it in other ways. So the saying it once or the first time opens the door to, it's okay for me to not be okay, and I'll talk about it, or I'll dance to it, or I'll paint to it, or whatever way is easier for me.
And exactly, and this is why the Gaza writers, the Gaza Monologues writers, who were 13, 14 to 18 at that time when they started in 29, now they are the healers, the drama therapists of the younger people in Gaza during this this war. And so they are working with their community, and they have been working with their community since 2014, because they have studied, continued to study with Ashtar from 2009. And then they graduated, and then they became the trainers of other youngsters. And whenever there were other wars, they were the ones who would help
stepped forward,
absolutely. And so,
and just to tell the listeners, you're in a common space, and that's why we have all these noises. So, bear with us. But tell me, because you keep on talking about Ashta, tell me a little bit about the history of Ashta Theatre, because I think the way my first NGO that I'm part of is my first baby, it sounds like Ashta is your firstborn.
Well, it is my, it is somehow, it is the organization that I co-found together with Edward Marlem, my partner, husband, my like artistic partner and husband in life. And so we were descendants of another theater company that was called El Hikawati Theater Company. But in 91, we started Ashtar as the first theater school in Palestine. And it grew from there. It really spread out. And now we are starting a new adventure.
Venture.
In Ashtar. Yes, exactly. Which is creating a theater and circus academy. The first performing arts academy in Palestine. So we're growing. And
okay.
And the students who studied with Ashtar, because mainly in the theater school, we have proposed 3 years of studies, and then they became 4 years of studies. And the graduates who had studied with us had some of them came back to Ashtar, and now they are working with us, and they became also. One of them is our artistic director at the moment, Emil Saba. So he started when he was 12 as a student, and he grew within the organization, and then he went to the US and he had his MFA in theater studies, and then he came back. So it's good that this organization is an organization for and with the people, for the young people and the youth of Palestine, and it grows alongside them. And so for us, making theater is not a job. Making theater is a lifestyle. We do it because we believe that through theater, we are able to look at life differently. We are able to create a better future. We are able to maintain our identity. We are able to be critical. We are able to make a platform for our community to look at their problems and raise their voice towards the decision makers and try to readjust reshape their future. And so what we are doing at the moment is we are creating our future despite the war and despite all the atrocities that and the genocide and everything that we are passing, but we are trying to look into the horizon and give our youth a possibility to be, give our youth a better future and
new tools. I look at what,
and
but when I look at what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank and generally in the area, I think to myself, you know what, how can anyone in the world expect the people of Gaza, West Bank, to be reacting in a different way when they're faced, let's not talk about what's happened since forever, but since what's happened on October the 7th of 2023, how can they expect the people of Gaza and of the West Bank not to be angry, not to be lashing out, or not to be just worried about their survival? How can they expect generosity of spirit when the situation in the country is violent? It's, I think of myself, I was there with my son or a small baby. My only concern would be our survival. My anger would be directed at the people that had brought, that were destroying the buildings around me or were stopping the food getting to me or were bombing the hospitals where I tried to take myself because my leg was shattered. So I don't know. So what you're doing is what more people should be doing and is offering tools for people to manage what is happening to them now and not to just be angry.
I would redirect the question, if you allow me, Majda.
Absolutely. You're the boss.
Thank you. I don't like to be a boss, but
I'm saying, this conversation, it's your conversation.
Okay.
I agree with you.
So I would redirect it towards the Israeli society. I would say, how come the Israeli mothers, and especially mothers, and even the youth who had lived who were born in this country and who had seen all the wars that are happening and who are watching what is happening now, how come they don't revert? How come they don't understand that the other side, the Palestinian side, are also people with needs and that they have the right to live as much as the Israelis? So that is the question that should be directed towards the Israeli society more than the Palestinian society. The Palestinians are on their land.
But don't misunderstand me when I'm saying that I don't know why people are expecting different reactions. Is I'm directing it to the global community and to the Israelis. Why are you expecting sympathy for the hostages and when there are over 500 Palestinian young people, and it's usually the young boys that are in jails? Why are they not considered hostages, yet the hostages that were taken on October the 9th are considered hostages? So this dehumanizer, why are you considering that the Palestinians should be humans, yet you're not treating them like humans? You've dehumanized them.
Exactly.
So I totally agree with you. I'm glad you clarified it, because to me, that's the question.
Yes.
Why are you expecting human treatment when you're not acting like you as an Israeli? And let's also not put them all in the same category, because there are a lot of Israelis within Israel that are horrified with what is happening, but Bibi's got a stronghold on the conversation.
But not to talk politics, but to talk humanitarian.
Humanity, yes.
Even the 5,000, what they call prisoners, they are abducted and they were put in, they were taken as hostages, and mainly young people of the age of, as young as 9. Can you believe that a 9-year-old is to be abducted from his parents and put in jail? Now, when they call them prisoners, this means in international law that they have done something wrong. But yes, when they are not prisoners, they are abducted hostages, and they are put in a cell. So.
And they are 9 years old. I mean, they are 9 years old.
9 and 11, and many of them had lost their brain. Many of them had the amount of shock.
Lost limbs.
Exactly, lost limbs, lost life even. The amount of shock that they have been facing is even doctors, people who are only doing their humanitarian role. They are abducted and hostages. They became hostages, but they are put in what they call them prisoners, in prison. So we have to really be careful of the language, because the language is one tool of colonialism.
Yep, I agree with you.
Exactly, and it starts from there. And it really works on the mind of the people that, now if you are not aware, then you hear the word and you think that there is a reason behind why these people are prisoners and why these were only called hostages. But this is the...
And sorry to interrupt you, and they also use the word for prisoners for 9-year-olds, yet they forget, they exclude the fact that they are 9 years old, they're children.
Absolutely.
So they put the label of the prisoner on, so you forget that these are 9-year-old little boys.
Absolutely. Even the word occupation. I mean, in English, it is such like a critical word of like you could really say I'm occupying this room or that toilet or my occupation is a theater maker. It doesn't really make sense, the word occupation, anymore, that it has all the connotation of the violence that is presented on a people on their land.
But to change the focus, half of Cyprus is occupied.
Yeah.
And yet, because the fact that it's a frozen conflict and there's no apparent conflict, people are not dying, it's not considered. I mean, it's half an island, a third of the island, just over a third of the island is occupied. We are an island of just over 1 million people, and we have 6 armed forces. We have the Greek Cypriot Army, the Turkish Cypriot Army, the Greek Army, the Turkish Army, the British Army, and the UN Army. We're an island of 1.2 million.
Yeah.
The third is occupied, and yet, because it's a frozen conflict, it's not considered negative. It's not considered, the occupation is trivialized.
Yes.
I mean, if you go to the north, it's a lot more apparent. There are villages that are military bases. Mm. They've taken over certain villages, and those villages that used to belong, I think the one is Maronite. Now the Maronites can't go to their village because it's been taken over by the Turkish army. And people don't understand the effect of colonialism. The fact that this is a trauma that is deep and has repercussions. So I agree with you. We don't understand the true depth of the word occupation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Tibet...
We've trivialized it.
Absolutely. Tibet is occupied by China.
Yes.
There are different countries who are that are occupied.
Occupied.
But it's a mellow word. You know what I mean?
Yes, they've trivialized it. It's a word, as you said... I could occupy your space. The toilet's occupied, as you said.
Absolutely.
It's as simple as that.
Absolutely.
It's as simple as that. Let's bring out another facet of you, because we almost to the end. You also involved in the 1 Billion Rising. You're a feminist. Tell me about Iman the feminist.
My understanding of feminism is... And my work towards it is more about finding the essence of if I'm doing culture, politics, economy, history, how would I tackle these things in a perception where me as a woman and is taken care of the other women first, and also the society in general,
give me an example.
No, the example is not about what I'm thinking or what I just said. The example I will come to it, but because there are so many women in politics around the world. They run countries, they run even like the EU, or they run economy. But they all do it in the shoes of the men, with the same perception of how throughout centuries, men were able to create the systems of running the world. What I'm interested in is to look for a different way of how we should be looking at running the world from the perception of a feminine look, which means that we are inclusive, not exclusive. Mm-hmm. We are more rounded, not we are linear, that we are embracing to all needs instead of the need of the strong. The strong ones and the powerful ones, flipping the pyramid of power, like politics, economy, and arms, and making it more the power of the people, the power of giving, rather than the power of taking, because this is feminine.
Yes, inclusivity is
feminine as well. What I do, the example that I want to give you, is that I work within the system of my theater organization in that way. I try to be inclusive. I give space and platform and voice to everyone. I try to be the bridge between the possibilities of that the people want and the power organizations or the power makers or the policy makers, in the country. And also, I try to put forth issues of women and girls in my plays, and give them a space to express and to tell their stories, and to tell not only their stories but to demand their rights, and that is very important. And so, by being part of 1 Billion Rising, I tried also to give to shed light on a national level about the rights of girls. Not to be wed at early age, for the rights of girls and women to choose their
to have the
right
choices.
Yes, to have the right to make choices, choices of education, choices of love, choices of work, etc., etc. Also to I work with my organization on campaigns that would reform the laws towards the women, like the laws of what we call like crimes that are called crimes of honor, which we do not believe.
Or crimes of passion?
not really, yes, but in Palestine they were called the crimes of honor. Of course, this is completely wrong, because the crime is a crime, and so there is no honor in a crime, and so you cannot really, what is honor, and whose honor are we talking about? What about the women's honor in that case? It's always been looked at as if it is a man's honor.
Yes.
So all these things...
And it's the man's perception that controls the family honor.
Absolutely.
Which is usually to the negativity of the woman's honor.
Absolutely, absolutely. So all these are plays that are put in a context of advocacy campaigns,
okay,
in order to be changing the laws and regulations that are looked at.
Do you also do theater with your feminism?
But this is what I'm...
Okay, so you use your theater and then you use it to advocate...
Absolutely.
...for changes in the perceptions and in the legislation.
Absolutely.
Where possible.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, tell me what's in the future for you. What is on the table that you're planning for the future?
At the moment, as I said before, we're setting our strides towards the Performing Arts Academy and Village. So I'm creating a Performing Arts Village that combines theater, circus, and other forms of art.
Okay.
Music and dance, etc. So it's going
and
to
where
be...
Where will this be based? In Jerusalem?
No, that's going to be in Bir Zeit, to the north of Ramallah.
Okay.
And
but you're also doing a postgraduate degree.
At the moment, I am, yes. And I'm doing in cultural administration. And I'm writing about nation branding and looking at the Gaza monologues as a case study.
Okay. And tell me, is there anything you want to talk about before we close?
Well, I want to say that it is very important that women do get together continuously, that we should be brave enough to say that feminism is a solution, it's not a problem, and that we should be really working together, not excluding men, of course, but men can be feminists as well. So
exactly.
it is the way that would bring a third way of either becoming preys or predators. So feminism is the third way for me.
I agree with you that we need to start presenting feminism as a community solution. It's not to the benefit of men or women. It benefits the community as a whole because it's inclusive. So it's absolutely making a space for everyone with their weaknesses and their strengths.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that feminism also go hand in hand with the arts, because art is also art and theater is inclusive, and because to be an artist is to be sensitive towards the others and towards humanity, and so is supposedly feminism, because the feminine aspect of our being is to be motherly, to be able to love,
and to be receptive. And to be receptive to what's happening around you.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. I think this is a good place to stop. I think that's been a wonderful conversation, although you and I could have a lot of other conversations for another time.
Maybe another time we will do another one.
And you never know, we might meet in another city or
hopefully
another place or another program. But I'm really, really glad we met, and I'm really glad we've had this conversation. And I really admire the fact that you are using art, which is imperative, because our young people, we don't want our young people when they're older to be making the same mistakes that we are making. So they've got to express, speak, be visible, and work through the traumas we are putting them through.
Yes, certainly. And certainly, because education is a flop. And education needs a big, big reform all over the world. And it starts from there. And so, because schools, they take away kids from the lap of the mother into the lap of a father, or not a father, sorry, into the lap of a patriarch. Absolutely.
Patriarchal, I agree with you.
Approach. Yeah,
I agree with you. Education needs a completely overhaul, because I think it's taking away the critical thinking of all of us.
Yes.
Going to a room, and I remember as a child, I'm not particularly artistic creatively. I am with my hands. And I remember being told to draw a tree and my teacher telling me it looked like an upside down pear. And I thought, oh no, I can't draw. Yet that was my perception of what I saw as a tree. So I can completely destroy your confidence in the way you see life.
Yes, so, unfortunately.
So let's move forward and see how inclusive we can make the world, and how more loving and kind we can make the world. And very grateful for the work you do. And as I said, look forward to meeting you in another space and in another city.
Yes.
And to the listeners, stay kind and stay tuned for more work by Iman Naun.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.